Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hi, this is Clementine Ford, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannah Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannah Finney, and we're coming to you from the Hampton Inn in West Memphis, Arkansas. Ask me why.
Why?
Because our guest was born in Memphis, and the only place I've ever stayed near Memphis is West Memphis, Arkansas.
Oh, my gosh.
At the Hampton Inn, where I got an ear infection in the pool.
Hannes, you have led a glamorous life. I'll say that.
Oh, no. People don't even know.
Wait a minute. The name of the town is West Memphis.
West Memphis, across the river from Memphis.
Okay, because our guest tonight, Clementine Ford, she is from Memphis, Tennessee.
Right, Memphis, not some bullshit like West Memphis. She's ready to walk out the door right now if I say she was born in West Memphis.
And here we are at the Hampton Inn, and what a lovely ballroom they have.
They don't have a ballroom. We're in the parking lot. We've set up a table in the parking lot. It's still the most glamorous place in town.
Listen, I'm really excited about tonight's guest. Her name is Clementine Ford. She is an actress. And Matt Oswald, you know our friend Matt Oswald, friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
He sends over talent now and then. And this is one of his, he said, Christine, this girl has a story.
He gets 10% of nothing. Absolutely nothing. But by the way, Matt Oswald at Puddin' Strip, right, is his Twitter. His Twitter is the best Twitter you'll ever read.
It is, but this is exciting, and it's an update. His Twitter has changed.
What?
It is now at Matt Oswald VA, Virginia. So it's at Matt Oswald VA. But if you go to at Puddin' Strip, it'll direct you there automatically.
All right.
You are welcome.
All right, good.
All right, so our guest tonight, Clementine Ford, she is talking tonight about real body, real issues. And I know she's addressing this one particular magazine, People Magazine, and this one, I want to say episode. That's not what I'm trying to
say.
You
kids today, you may not remember, magazines are something printed on paper.
Yeah.
Where you would turn pages. It physically exists in the real world.
But there was a particular issue called Real Body, Real Issues, and they had five people, talents, mostly actresses, I think a couple were dancers, and basically they were sizes like 4, 2, 8, and 10. I mean, all small
sizes. Yeah, that's like 10. That's insane. Like America isn't a size 50 most places.
But anyway, nonetheless, it's a pretty big deal to get into a magazine, take your clothes off, and say, this is who I am.
Right, exactly.
No matter who you are, I mean, there's people size 2 that are uncomfortable with their body.
Right.
So this is a big deal, and this is what she's talking about. Hannes, have you ever taken your clothes off for a magazine?
Not for a magazine, but as you recall, for the TV movie, the Breaking Vegas for the History Channel, I did have a nude scene in that.
Tell us about your nude scene, Hannes.
Well, okay, so this was like based on a book on a real thing of the MIT Blackjack team.
Right.
And I played the very nerdy professor who headed the MIT Blackjack team. I know. What a stretch. I'm like Gary Oldman. I just disappear into the nerdness. So it was supposed to be that we're card counters, which is technically legal, but they don't like it. So they accused me of having a computer hidden on my body, which makes me mad. So I'm in a security office, and I take off all my clothes to prove that I don't have a computer. And it was like, so I'm in this. So they're like shooting. They were shooting in a real casino, but they're shooting the video screen. So in the office is only two other actors. So I, you know, I'm like, I don't know. I'll do it with a jock strap. We'll see how that looks. And I do that. And wait.
Did you bring your own jock strap or was it like a body
glove? An animal? Of course I brought my own jock strap.
I mean, but if it's a television shoot, I would think that they would have like a little panty or something.
Yes, but they had. Okay. Well, that actually is a different story because they were very low budget. It's the History Channel. So the wardrobe woman was attempting to create what is called a modesty sock out of, I believe, a footy that a woman would normally, like a nylon footy.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it was too small. It couldn't possibly contain. So that wasn't working. So I'm like, oh, let me try this. And then what happens is that a woman comes in and she sees me and runs back out, right? So first we do it, and I'm doing the jockstrap, and the director's like, well, I mean, it's fine. We can blur. And I'm like, oh, what the fuck do I care? There's two guys sitting here.
Yeah.
So I take off my jockstrap, and I put it in the desk drawer. This is somebody's desk, which is now has my jockstrap that I just wore.
Yeah.
In their desk drawer. They'll never know this.
So
yeah. I know. I was laughing while I was doing it. Like, this is the stupidest thing in the world. So I do it. Then the woman comes in for the second take, the actress. But she didn't realize now I'd actually be naked. So her reaction was finally like, ah!
Oh,
it was
good.
Perfect.
So
right,
that was,
right.
Yeah.
So that, anyhow, that, so all you see is you see my then very pert ass from a high angle.
Your ass was pert? Really?
That's the only part of my body that's ever been pert. You can ask the wife.
Good for you.
Ask the wife. That's what I've always had, the Irish apple ass. The rest of me is doughy and German. But my ass is like an Irish...
You are turning on our guest right now. You realize that.
She's actually left the room. She's so turned on, and she's heaving.
Here's the thing about, like, real body, real issues. When you think about it, and here's I like to think about this in many facets of life. Like, I know I'm never going to be the prettiest girl in the room, but I'm also not going to be the least attractive person in the room, and everybody has issues. You know, it's like when we would do comedy together, Hannes, you'd always say, you know, Christine, you're not as funny as you think you are, but you're also not as bad as you think you are.
Right. And everybody, yeah. And
everybody's in the middle.
Right. And yeah, when it comes to looks, every woman is convinced that there's something terribly wrong with her that every man in the room is noticing. And no, we're not, because we're not really, you know, it's like men are, I know it's, it sounds sort of counterintuitive because men can be very critical of women, but men are looking for a reason to find you attractive.
What does that mean? What do you mean?
That means instead of like a woman going, oh, my ass is too big. Well, if your ass is big, you probably have big boobs. Well, guess what the guys are looking at? The boobs, right? They're looking at the most positive version
of you.
So
play up what you have.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Just know that it's, you know, again, I used to have a joke and I never made it work where it's like a man will look at him. You know, a woman looks at herself in the mirror naked. She can be the most beautiful woman in the world. She will find one thing.
Yeah.
One thing, her ear is wrong. She's got a mole. Like, she doesn't like her toes.
What about her eyebrows?
Right, something. Yeah, right. As they once said on Seinfeld, who cares about eyebrows?
Yeah.
But a woman will find the worst thing about herself, which may be the only possible negative, and concentrate on it. A man will look at himself naked and he's like, I look fantastic. It doesn't matter what he looks like, how fat he is, how ugly he is. He will think he looks fantastic. And it's like women need to learn to just be more like that.
So get a little more ego.
Yeah, just be, oh, I look great.
But what were you saying about men looking at women wanting to find a reason to want to fuck them, as it were? Like, what are you saying there?
What I'm saying is whatever you think your negative is, mm-hmm. that whoever you want to think find you attractive, they're looking to find you attractive. So you have a big butt, you have big boobs, they're gonna look at your boobs. You're like, oh my god, my boobs are so small. Well, guess what? You probably got a tiny ass, and now people are looking at that. It's like they're looking to find you attractive. That's what I'm trying to say. Does this not clear? They're trying to, you know.
No, it's interesting.
Guys are not being as negative as you think they are.
Well, I think that applies to a lot of things in life. You know, when you go to a comedy club, you want the comedian to be funny. We all want to laugh here. You know what I mean? Or I think about that when I go to an audition. Like, the casting director probably really wants me to do well because they would like to submit the best 20 people.
That's why audiences or casting directors get so mad when you suck. Because it's like, you're making my life hard here. I came here to laugh.
Yeah.
And you're not funny. You know what I mean? That's why people like overreact to like, a joke that didn't go so well.
Okay. So men are always going to find something positive.
Now, I'm not saying men are emotionally mature enough to actually communicate this in any positive way. Because what I'm saying is in their heads, they're trying to find you attractive.
All right.
And they will find you attractive.
All right.
But they'll probably say something stupid and ruin the whole thing.
Well, I'm anxious to hear what Clementine has to say about this, because it was a pretty, you know, a pretty bold thing to do, to get out there and
you recently, as we know, you boldly got naked on the back of a motorcycle.
Well, that's true.
As you've seen, for your 50th birthday, you had riding naked on the back of a motorcycle.
Yeah, but that's true. But that wasn't I have control of those pictures, first of all.
Yes, exactly.
And so Clementine's looking at us like, what is this girl doing?
What kind of podcast is this?
No, but I turned 50.
It's the internet. We got to go dirty sometimes.
Do something bold. And so I got some pictures taken on the back of a motorcycle. Anyway.
It's one thing for me to do my silly little nude scene. And by the way, I said yes because how many nude scenes am I going to be offered?
Right.
Right? So I'm like, how can I turn it down? But to be asked specifically to be in a bikini, not even as a sidebar to an interview, but it's like, this is about your body.
You being
this
in this bathing suit.
This issue is about what do people's bodies look like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's intense. That's very bold. So I'm excited to hear her story. But before Clementine comes on, I did want to remind you guys that if you'd like to support Storyworthy in this brand new year, why don't you?
Yeah, why don't you sons of... No, let's positive. We're going to go positive.
Here's what you can do. Why not just follow us on Twitter and Instagram, at Storyworthy, and tell your friends. That's the main thing. Ben, did you know that? It's called word of mouth. Have you heard of that? Yeah. And so you tell two friends, and they tell two friends,
and so on.
And it's totally free.
What really moves the needle on podcasts is references to a 1973 commercial. That is what the kids like nowadays.
Here's one more thing you can do, you guys. You can buy my book, Pit to LAX, My Storyworthy Life, available over on Amazon, the Kindle version.
More importantly, you could buy it directly from Christine.
The audiobook. Yeah, the main thing is if you buy it from me, I get $10. If you buy it from Amazon, I get $4. So it's just math.
So Amazon are horrible people, except when they're selling other products through our banner ad, and they're fantastic.
That's right. All right, you guys, wherever you are, stick around because Clementine Ford is on her way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have Hollywood manager Barry Katz.
And I'll be talking about over-delivering.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
I like that.
Hi, this is Matt Oswald, and you're listening to Storyworthy, while Christine Blackburn is giving me a handjob under the table.
And we're back. We have come across the river into Memphis proper. We're now on Beale Street.
Ooh,
Beale Street
right.
is fun. I remember years ago when I stayed at this Hampton Inn, we went to Beale Street, had some barbecue, I think at B.B. King's, the original B.B. King's place, which I don't know if it's still there or not.
You can't not walk down Beale Street and not sing that song, Walking in Memphis, by Mark Cohn. You know what I mean?
I can.
Because you don't know music.
No, I actually remember that song, and it's a good song, but what I remember is thinking, it's cool, it's a good song, but it doesn't sound like anything I would hear in Memphis.
Interesting, yeah, because it's not like blues.
It was like an Englishman being very sort of this kind of cool song, and I'm like... Where's the?
I don't think Mark Cohn is English. I don't think so. I think he's American as can be.
I don't think anyone knows who Mark Cohn is.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are so glad that you're with us today because we have quite the storyteller. Are you ready, Hannes?
I'm so ready.
All right, you guys. Clementine Ford is here right now. She's an actress and a writer and a mom, and she's best known for her work as Molly Kroll on The L Word. Did you watch The L Word?
I didn't, but I didn't have cable at that time.
Yeah.
I guess I could go back now in time on the
streaming.
It's a
pretty good show. It was pretty progressive for its time, especially.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. And who else was on that? Jennifer Beale, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the
show, Clementine, she played the daughter of her real-life mom, Sybil Shepherd. So that
Ooh.
Means she is seeing her mother in sexual situations, not with just other men, but with other women.
Hey.
Didn't watch it.
You didn't?
No, you could.
She didn't watch it.
We'll discuss that later, then.
Good for her.
Well, you know, I was going to say it's Hollywood, but it's not. It's Memphis. It's Memphis, Jake. It's Memphis. Anybody? Chinatown?
No.
Nobody cares.
Clementine also played Mackenzie Browning on The Young and the Restless. Now you can find...
Oh, that I watched.
Here's something, though. Here's something what I really enjoy about Clementine as I was looking into her. She has a fabulous blog. It's called The Dog Ate My Antidepressants, and it's on WordPress. And that is definitely something to check out. You can
Everybody's on the WordPress now.
Yep. You can find Clementine on Twitter at Clementine's Ford. So it's Clementine with an S and then Ford. And she's here right now. So, folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Clementine Ford.
When People Magazine called to ask me to pose in a bikini for their Most Amazing Bodies issue, I knew they'd either made a mistake or hadn't seen me in a while because I was 5'5" and 170 pounds. I told my manager to call them back and tell them that I was fat. Fatter? He was clearly concerned. No, the same, but too fat to pose in a bathing suit. A very long 5 minutes later, he called to tell me that I would be a part of the Real Bodies, Real Sizes feature. They wanted me because of the extra weight. Apparently, letting myself go had been a great idea. I called my mom immediately to tell her. Well, of course they want you. Hello, you're stunning. Let me tell you something about my mom. I could be so fat I'd require an airlift to leave the house, and she'd still think I should pursue a career as a swimsuit model. No joke. She lives in denial. She has to. It must be devastating for a former supermodel to acknowledge that her daughter is a hippopotamus. Speaking of, I've been asked more times than I care to count what it's like to have a sex symbol slash model slash actress slash goddess for a mother. My answer has always been that I didn't know any different. It should have been that the suggestion inherent in the question, it must be so hard to have a perfect specimen of a human being for a mother when you yourself are a bridge troll, is a pretty terrible part of it. Once during an interview when I was 16, I responded by sobbing until they had to turn off the camera. I thought I didn't see anything other people saw. I thought I only saw my mom the same way any other person sees their mom. It wasn't until my 20s that I realized that growing up with a life-size cutout of my 18-year-old size 2 bikini-clad mother in the living room might have affected my body image. Fact is, I favor my father. We're shorter and rounder. My weight spreads itself around proportionally. Hers sits on her torso, leaving her famously gorgeous legs untouched. If she went on a late-night binge, which she called feeding the baby, she still calls it feeding the baby, she only had to wear a flouncy top to hide it, and no, it never crossed my mind that my perfect mother's binging had any connection to my own. It's been suggested to me that my extra weight could be a subconscious rebellion, a way of creating an obvious differentiation between us, or even a barrier protecting myself from other people in intimacy. Rather than take this opportunity to break it down and do some honest soul searching, maybe even getting to the root of the issue, it was much easier to go home, lie on the floor, and obsess about my pre-shoot game plan. I promised myself perfection for the next 2 weeks. I would eat only lean protein and drink only water, green tea, and the occasional green juice. They might have wanted a fatty, but I was going to do everything in my power to get down to at least pleasantly plump. The more I planned and plotted, the more I panicked. The more I panicked, the more I wanted to eat. I went to 2 workout classes a day, spinning and a bar class that made my legs shake. I flipped my hair over my shoulder and talked about my focus and deprivation. Except I wasn't depriving myself. Yes, sure, I stuck to the plan all day, but when night came, all bets were off. I'd eat an entire pound of almonds or a jar of almond butter with jelly in a bowl. Every night as I lay in bed with a stomach ache, I swore up and down that tomorrow would be better, but tomorrow never was. The night before the shoot, I felt as lumpy and dumpy as ever. I sat on my couch, chewing my nails and the insides of my cheeks. I had been healthy for 10 hours. There was no way I was going to blow it now. I told myself that I could stay good for just one night. Seconds later, I was in the kitchen with my right hand in the pantry and my left in the refrigerator. I poured Trader Joe's vanilla almond cereal and soy milk into a small mixing bowl and shoveled it into my mouth with the biggest spoon that would fit. When the bowl was empty, I took a deep breath, maybe my first since I started eating. I told myself to just stop, but I couldn't. I felt completely out of control with no choice but to refill the bowl over and over until I ran out of soy milk and had to switch to water. Then until I tossed 2 empty cereal boxes into the trash. I stood in my dirty rental kitchen feeling desperate. I looked around, dazed and overwhelmed by what I'd done. I knew I would have to explain to my little sister slash roommate why all of her cereal was gone. Again. I would be intensely aware of the rolls of fat protruding over my newly purchased size 32 waist jeans as I cried and promised to buy her more. I saw the ruins of this squandered opportunity when I showed up for the shoot looking like I was pregnant. I forgot all about the chance to be empowered and happy in my skin. I forgot that the magazine wanted me for who I was, not the slender woman I thought I should be. The shoot was on a clear, shining California afternoon at a house on a cliff overlooking the Pacific Ocean. I couldn't enjoy it. I was blinded by shame. I was sure that everywhere I turned, people felt sorry for me, the fat chick. I imagined them wondering what happened to me and assuming that I must have been adopted because I was twice the size my mother was at my age. I was furious that I had humiliated myself. I refused to eat anything that day, subsisting only on water and Diet Coke until it was time to go home. I took a small bag of baked chips with me, my cheeks burning, sure that everyone was picturing me shoveling handfuls into my mouth as I drove. With the shoot over and any perception of control I might have had gone, I could see how ridiculous all of my anxiety was. There were 5 of us there that day of all different shapes and sizes. Even the smallest among us had body parts that weren't her favorite. I was so obsessed with hating myself that I couldn't see that. It was an empowering day, and I'd missed it. When the magazine hit newsstands, I wanted to look as much as I didn't, like a car accident. I knew that however they turned out, I'd have to live with the photos forever. I opened the magazine. There we were, younger and older, taller and shorter, fatter and thinner, a little airbrushed, but not much, and perfect, every one of us. I actually loved the way I looked. I couldn't believe how I'd tortured myself over nothing. Over the course of the following year, I took what I'd learned from this experience and began to see that food wasn't the problem. I lost 30 pounds and started to heal, finally learning what healthy looked like on me.
Clementine, it's really a touching story.
It's sad.
Oh. I mean, every woman has felt that vulnerable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So tell us more about the actual day, because you did end up having a good time on the set or not.
I did, sort of, but it was horrible. Like, I tried on a bunch of different bathing suits, and none of them fit, and it was...
But the other girls are there, and they've got makeup, wardrobe. I mean, there's money put into this production, right?
Yeah, and we were all... It should have been a lot more fun than it was. And I adored the other women in the shoot. Kristen Chenoweth was one of them, and she's just great.
Fantastic.
And so sweet. And I knew her manager from around, and, you know, it's a small world.
Yeah, I do want to point out that you are, in fact, a very good-looking woman.
Thank you so much.
And it's like, people, you know, you see people on TV who are literally rail thin. And considering the fact that TV puts on weight, you're like, what do they look like in person?
Yeah.
It's like, it's so weird that we have to create an idea like, well, you know, you were a size 8, I think Christine said. Like, that was such an amazingly...
I think they put size 8, but I think I was like a size 12.
Yeah, interesting. Really?
Yeah, but even that's what Marilyn Monroe was.
Why would they do that? Why did People Magazine was trying to make a point here, right?
Yeah,
like, real body, real issues.
I thought I was like a 10 or 12, but maybe not.
Because literally the five women were like 2, 4, 8, 10.
That was me.
No, I think there was somebody higher.
Oh, no.
Really?
Unless it was the volleyball player.
Yeah, the taller
was 7
girl.
Feet tall.
Yeah, and she was taller.
And
wait a minute, was that Gabrielle Reese?
No. I'd have peed my pants if it was.
Really? Because she's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Gabrielle Reese
is
amazing.
It's the only female volleyball player I've ever heard of.
She's a stunning human being. She's like looking
human
at like Shaquille O'Neal in terms of the physical, her physique is like
I would like to
goddess.
Watch a porn of her and Shaquille O'Neal together.
I don't know that I would watch that.
So
I think you'd
me,
watch it just for the freak factor, let's face
it's
it.
It's the car accident factor.
Yeah.
So tell us more about that day, though. Did you actually shoot with the other women near you, or did you shoot every person was individual? Like, your call time was 10 and hers was 12. And
we each did our own individual. So, like, mine was in the pool, thank God, because it was like, you know, my butt was under the water. And then at the end of the day, we all lined up together and did a group shoot.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Did you have a lunch break?
Yeah, but I didn't eat lunch. I drank Diet Coke.
But you wouldn't eat lunch.
Stressed out about... No.
I'm sorry. They probably saved a lot of money on catering that day. They were like, we don't need any craft services.
Right?
No. We got a bunch of girls in bikinis.
And you have a little sister at home.
Yeah, we were roommates.
And could you talk to her?
No, she kind of saw it all happening, but we were in different... She just come home from Yale and was trying to kind of find herself, and I was trying to lose myself, and there was a lot of... just personal craziness also happening at the time that everyone around me was just kind of watching it.
Yeah.
In horror.
People don't realize when they open a magazine and they see people in a magazine, they think that these people, everybody has this perfect life and there's absolutely no problems and obviously they have money and what's the big deal? And here you are completely exposing yourself, literally,
right.
Without your clothes on. And you're saying that this is really fucking
hard,
man.
Yeah, and people think that just the fact that people are successful or have money makes them not have any problems. And we have people on the show all the time who are eminently successful, and they're fucked up.
Right.
No, what I'm saying is, like, they are completely
money,
normal.
So.
Yeah, normal people will come in here, and they are just people. It'll be somebody you're like, this is one of the most successful people I've ever met. It's just a person. Who happens to also be talented, that doesn't mean they don't have human feelings.
Right. I don't even think in the article that I talked about, I said a bunch of stuff about feeling great and being vegan and working out.
Yeah. Just kind of like glossing it over. Kind
yeah.
Of a,
it's like a switch.
So your mom, like you said, you could be, you know, any size in the world and she's going to tell you because that's what mothers do.
Yes, but she genuinely believes it. She had a friend who had, her name was Karushka, and she had this like yoga outfit company years ago. And I was like 12 and super chubby. And my mom kept like in front of me pushing this woman going, Clementine should model for you. And I'm like, it's a fitness company, mom.
Yeah.
This is not. What they're looking for.
So that's sort of disappointing, though, that you can't really talk to her in terms of her. She couldn't. she couldn't empathize with you.
No. No, she can't. But she has her own issues. I mean, everybody has their own issues.
I wanted to ask about the... So there actually was a cardboard cutout of your mom in a bikini in your house.
Yes, I should have brought the picture.
That was there all the time?
Yeah.
What was it? What was
Kodak.
What was it take? Oh, it was for Kodak film.
It was a Kodak modeling
job. Because she was a model before
she
was an actress. Yes. That's right.
You know, your mother, of course, in the first movie.
Last Picture Show.
Last Picture Show. Oh, my gosh. I mean, just the stunningness of this woman.
Yeah, well, I didn't get it until I saw the Last Picture Show on the big screen.
Yeah.
3 years ago. No, because like 4 years ago, I guess, was the first time I'd seen it on the big screen. And I sat next to one of my closest friends, who is also my mom's biggest fan. And I looked at the screen and I just had this moment of, I never have been and never will be as beautiful as this person. And now I understand why people always ask me those questions of, you know, what is it like? And how does that affect you? Well, now I know.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
But nobody will be like that. Nobody will be that beautiful.
Right. She's young. She's lit perfectly. And it's like they use all the takes that where she looks absolutely perfect. You know, I mean, yes, she was beautiful. Absolutely.
I was going to say, my mom was pretty beautiful. I mean, I have like candid photos of her with glasses and I'm a baby and she should be all like horrible looking, and she's not. She's gorgeous.
Here's what I love about your mom. She told Oprah Winfrey the most honest thing ever. Oprah Winfrey, I don't know if you remember this, honest, asks...
Yeah, let me look back and...
Okay, you're right. Why would I say that? You would never know this, but a lot of women might remember this moment. She looks at Cybill Shepherd and she says, what is it like? How does that feel to be so beautiful? And your mom answers, you know, I was born that way and it was a blessing that has come upon me that has opened doors. That was like so fabulous that she said that, right?
Yeah.
You know what? I'm sorry, but that's making me think of like I used to wonder about that because like not being Mr. Good Looking Guy. But then I realized at some point I it was almost not a consolation, but it made me feel better. Realize there are people in Hollywood who are just, they're good looking and they're good looking the way I'm funny. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not, if somebody said to me, are you funny? I'd say yes. That I didn't say it because it's ego.
Yeah.
I just know that that's my thing.
It's honest, yeah.
I'm funny. So if you're good looking, you're like, yeah, I'm good looking.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anymore. It doesn't make them feel better about themselves. They're just stating a fact.
But a lot of people who are interviewed, a lot of models specifically, you know, well, what do you
will
do?
Pretend.
Oh, I'm just, because I work out and I do yoga and I was a geek
in high school you were 6'8" in high school and you're blonde. It's like, there's no way you weren't good looking.
So your mom has been a really great role model. And now you do this magazine shoot and this is a good role model for your little sister, don't you think?
My sister does not have self-esteem issues. My sister, when she was the heaviest that she ever was in college, she actually told me later, she was like, I'm really surprised because when I lost weight, everyone said, oh, you look amazing. And she's like, I thought I looked hot when I was whatever weight she was.
Yeah.
But I do have three sisters and a brother and lots of younger cousins. And I thought it was important to go out and do that, do the shoot, do the whole thing. Also, just because I always have looked up to people who do stuff like that.
So is it hard to get your photo taken other than, forget about the bikini thing, but I've seen, you know, on YouTube, you in some fashion shows and some beautiful gowns. I think it's like couture. How is that? Like, I've never had a gown on in my life. What's that like?
I love it. It's like the best thing. It was the best thing ever. And now I hate it. So I love it and I hate it.
Tell me more. Tell me.
I think that I was able to really enjoy it for a time, and I was in a relationship with someone who loved fashion and dresses, and we, you know, would go and it would be a very specific look from head to toe. And the reality is, it's just not so much me. Like, it's not, I don't know. The dress up aspect gets old really fast.
Mm-hmm.
But is that really anybody?
Oh, sure. I think there's a lot of models.
Oh, really?
Sorry,
just threw a pen. Christine just hit herself in the face with a pen, ladies and gentlemen.
I think for sure, Hannes, there's a lot of models and a lot of people who are into style, and you know, they see certain fabrics or they see the way that something is cut. I mean, look at Project Runway. I mean, people are into fashion and couture. And
again, naming a show I would never watch with a gun to my head.
my husband's cousin, who is also our babysitter, is, I mean, she's like a million feet tall and she's so beautiful, but she loves it. And she's going to college right now. And she will go to classes in an outfit that she has like put together with her hair in a certain way and her makeup a certain way because it just makes her happy.
Yeah, I think
and
it's
she
just
loves
I just realized
doing
Christine's
it.
Nephew, who is now doing, he does wardrobe on the Goldbergs. Now and it's like he always studied that
he
stuff.
Looks he great
always,
man he always he, yeah he he's always looks great like he does not walk out of the house without looking like $1 million
yeah
because he's into it so but I guess my question was like I look up to models because I have a hard time getting my picture taken in a headshot situation or you know
well headshots
are
terrible and they are not anything real and they're just the devil
to me too but some people don't mind it at all and they just look at the camera and they mug and they smile and they you know they put their eyes going like around like a fake clock so that they're always moving and they've got this
okay
hi,
well still
smile.
If you're good at headshots there's something wrong with you like at least at a photo shoot like you can move around and you can do things headshots are like this weird you're supposed to smile in a certain way and like crinkle your eyes.
Yeah, and you have to turn your head a certain way, and because the rest of your body's not in the camera frame, you don't see how completely contorted and weird you're having to be to get your neck to not look completely fat or something.
It's stupid.
Which is my problem.
It's stupid, and nobody looks like their headshots. My current headshot, which is the one that I sent you,
okay,
which will be up.
You look tough, man. You look like a tough chick.
So that headshot was taken. My friend's husband is an incredible photographer. And he was doing some photos for her for commercial. And she's one of those people who is just naturally, like, luminous and beautiful and perfect. And I went and I didn't really put makeup on. And I was like, I want my Frances McDormand picture.
Yeah.
Because.
Like a prison outbreak picture.
Yeah. Like, I was so tired of being, like, I would
putting on the 10, going like, hi.
Yeah, and that's not me. And I'm never, ever, ever in a million years going to be cast as, like, the pretty girl next door. That's just not
ever
going to
be me.
That's
so insane because you're so
well, thank
you're so
you.
Good looking.
You're very kind.
But on the other hand, it's insane, and yet I understand the insanity.
Yeah.
Is like, you look too much like a person I might actually meet somewhere in Hollywood, they're like, no, we want completely unnaturally
fabricated
beautiful
person.
people who are beyond anything you can imagine.
Right. And I was tired of putting that. Like, I used to do a double process on my hair, and my hair is really thick.
Wow.
So it would take 4 hours, like, once a month. And all of these things that I don't want to be all obnoxious, but as a woman, as a feminist, as a person who cares about the world, that's not how I want to spend my time, and that's not the thing that I want to put forward.
There are bigger issues.
For me, and I think it's great for people who enjoy it and want to do it.
So tell us the picture, then describe the photo. I know what it looks like because I've seen it.
Okay. I feel like I look like I've come off the wheat fields, wherever there are wheat fields, which I don't know because...
You're in Hollywood. You don't know.
I grew up in LA, and I'm from Memphis. Memphis is a city, as small as it is.
It's a great photo. But
so
you look tough. And I think that it probably gets you in casting doors.
Well, I haven't tried. I have no idea.
I bet you it will.
I'm in this place. Like, I had a baby, and I, for the first time in my life, don't have representation. And I'm like, I don't know what to do.
Well, sometimes it's better, right? I mean, I've been told let go and let it come to you.
That's kind of been my life, and my career has been... Oh, this person saw that thing that you did, or
Well, this podcast is in all the biggest offices in Hollywood, I'm sure that this will lead directly.
Yes.
Can I ask? Wait, remember earlier Christine said, you know, you were on the L Word, and your mother was on the L Word, and you said you did not watch any of her intimate scenes on the L Word. Did you? Did you try once and stop? Did you just know you couldn't watch it?
I just didn't really want to. I just didn't have any interest in it. I thought she was great, and Jane, what's happening to me? Jane, come on.
Sorry, it's
Jane
blonde.
Lynch.
Yes, thank you.
With Jane Lynch
dear God.
In the L Word. Yeah, because that played her girlfriend.
Jane Lynch. Yeah. That's like one of my favorite television couples ever. So I did watch.
I got to tell you, in my head, it's my favorite television couple right now. But let me get on the interweb here. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, they were great. But otherwise, I didn't need to watch it.
But you've seen your mom do, have you seen her do sex scenes with a man?
Moonlighting,
they never hooked up. That was
I
the
never
whole
really
thing.
Watched.
Oh, they did,
it.
And then they jumped the shark.
Oh, I see.
Isn't that the moonlighting curse or something?
Well, the idea was that you always have to have the couple. Same thing happened on
Tension.
Cheers, frankly, when they got together.
That was
and
wasn't
friends
that great.
And friends
and
same
friends.
Thing.
Yeah, once they get together, It's not.
They jumped the shark.
Yeah, they jumped the shark.
No. So tell us about your son and how it is having a baby.
It's great.
I know,
it's
right?
The best thing ever. He's almost two and ready for preschool, I think, because I tried to take him out of the kids club the other day and he at the gym and he just cried and cried and cried and didn't want to go home. So it might be time for preschool for him.
Yeah, well, they have a lot of energy.
Yeah. He's teething and sort of sick right now, which is a bummer. But
yeah, look at you. You say you look, you know, you start talking about him, and you just start glowing.
No, it's one of the things in my life that I have always consistently wanted. I'm kind of a wishy-washy person, just generally, and this is something that I have always wanted. I think because on the one hand, I was very much raised by a nanny, and that's actually I was working on an essay this morning about that sort of, you know, nanny situation. And then my dad's side of the family, we just are this big, ridiculously loving family. Mm. And I wanted to bring that to my life. Like, I actually made a specific decision about
that. Yeah. In other words, you're going to bring that into your son's life, not a nanny situation into your son's life.
Yeah. And
so time away from your mom must have been so hard as a kid.
It was horrible.
Because you see her go, and right. She's got to go.
Yeah.
And then she's walking away no matter what.
I mean, my nanny was very much my mom.
Wow.
And my mother was very much my mother. And this is a new realization. And I've always wanted to explore that and write about that and talk about that. But I haven't quite figured out the way around it, the way to get into it without being a jerk, you know, because I could be a jerk. And
well, maybe, you know, on one page you just put everything out about your nanny that you can remember and
right.
All the most wonderful thoughts. And on the other page you put your mother's name and you put all the most wonderful thoughts.
Yeah.
And then you maybe mesh them in some way.
Well, I think that the biggest issue, and that was the love that I felt for my nanny is why I don't want my son to have a nanny, because I'm jealous.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm selfish, whatever. But many times in my life I wondered, both aloud and inside to myself, well, first, why did you want to have a kid about my mom if you this was not your focus? See, I should have told that story instead. Mm. And then I wondered, because she really fought for me in the divorce with my dad, and she brought me to California. My dad stayed in Memphis. He came a year or two later. She moved him out here because she was like, I can't. And this is too much. And I often
said, that was good that she did that.
Oh, see, she's very good at the village. My mom.
So giving, yeah.
She knows how to do a village.
Smart.
I often wondered, why didn't you just leave me and my dad in Memphis? Like, what was the point of fighting for me and taking me to these places when it was for what? A couple hours on the weekend, maybe?
Mm.
So, but we're also very close and very weird. And
yeah. But well, you said you have several siblings.
I do.
Are they from a different father?
Yes. And okay. My other siblings are from a different mother.
Okay.
Did your mom take you on set?
Mm-hmm.
Did you hang out with, like, did you ever hang out with a certain department, like
props.
Hang out with the makeup? Oh, hang out with props. No kidding.
Props. And my mom had this amazing woman. Her name was Sandy. She was her motorhome driver.
Yeah.
And she told me that if I didn't start cleaning my knees, she was going to take Ajax to them. She took Ajax to them.
And she
it
did.
It was so painful. And yeah, these were my
mother
friends.
Used to scrub my ankles with Ajax because my ankles used to, and I would never clean my ankles.
Yeah, no.
So is your nanny still
you
in your life?
You girls are filthy.
Is your nanny still in your life?
No, she passed away when I was 24.
Oh, that's
24.
Very sad. Did she watch you all the way through high school graduation and she saw you as an adult?
Yes.
Did she see some of your successes on television?
No.
That's too bad.
Yeah, but she saw my success as a person.
Yeah.
That's what was important.
Did she have children as well?
Yeah. 16 children.
She had 16 children?
Mm-hmm. And at one point,
herself.
So she was Swedish,
yes.
You're saying.
Well, herself. She had, your
she,
nanny
she
had
gave
16,
birth to 16 children.
Yes.
And then she was watching somebody else's children.
Yes. And we're from the South. So she watched my mom when my mom was younger. And then...
Is she a Disney cartoon?
Clementine, this
Disney
is
Disney cartoon.
A
this
huge
is the
song
screenplay
the
right
South.
Here. This is a screenplay. This woman.
You want to have a do-over?
I'm thinking like
no.
Color Purple. I mean, this is like unbelievable.
Yeah, but she wasn't when she was young, they lived on a farm and they had a telephone, so it wasn't color purple.
Wasn't that deep. Yeah. Mm-mm. That is so interesting.
So, she was part Cherokee.
People who become nannies often have many children of their own. At 16, I wouldn't have guessed.
Right.
But it's like, yeah, it's like if you're good at being a mother, then it's like you just transferred over. It's like, I'm a mom at home. I'm a mom at work. I'm just being a mom all the time.
Okay. And she moved out here for me, too. That's what I'm saying. My mom was good at the village.
So she got everybody to come out.
Right. And then the nanny, two of her kids moved out, and one of her kids nannied for us as well.
Holy cow.
And one of those kids is Jimmy Kimmel. And now you know the rest of the story.
All right. Let me ask you this. Now I understand one of your causes is homelessness.
Yes.
And so tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, it's my cause. I mean, you look around the city and we have a serious, serious problem that we don't do anything about.
I know.
And we just clean people out of their homes. And if you look, I think I blogged about it. Maybe I took a picture of it where I was driving under a bridge. And this guy was sweeping and tidying and cleaning, and it was cleaner than any other part of the city that's left to the city.
Yeah.
But we just toss people aside, and we don't give them the care that they need.
Yeah. It's really hard. Like, my daughter's 8. She's going to be 9. And, you know, in my neighborhood, there's about 4 or 5 homeless guys that just live in my neighborhood, and we pass them almost daily. And how what do I say? And, you know, we do talk about it, and I tell her that there are some shelters, but we don't know what their particular problems are. One of the guys we saw defecating in a flower bed.
Oh.
So it's really tough.
Yeah.
So it's not all like, I mean, obviously we want to show compassion, but at the same time, you know, it's just hard.
Well, I think the way that you can have support is supporting legislation to stop just sweeping people out of Skid Row. Skid Row was designed to
Well, unfortunately, yeah,
people.
We need legislation to get back to where we were. We
right.
were in the 80s taking care of most the people. I mean, there are people who are just homeless because they want to be homeless. The vast majority are mentally ill.
Thanks, Reagan.
And yeah, exactly. Ronald Reagan deregulated he swept out. He, you know, eliminated all that stuff because he was so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so ever since then, we've had a much bigger homeless population because we have mentally ill people who receive no
now,
care
Skid
whatsoever.
Row, actually, like Skid Row in Los Angeles, is a planned community. That is a planned situation
right.
where there are, you know, different resources for them around
but
Skid Row.
But you know they're being moved out because
we're gentrifying downtown and making it into apartments and stuff.
I
so now
most recent, the Alexandria Hotel, which is not single occupancy, but it's one of the like low income places to live.
Yeah.
The landlords want to kick everybody out and make it some fancy lofts.
Yeah.
And these people have nowhere else to go because there is no other planned community.
Right. So they'll get
so they're just
going to
get shoved into the poorest possible neighborhoods.
Right.
Where they won't be any more welcome. They might even be less welcome because if you have 6 kids and you're poor, you sure as hell are not giving any money to the guy living on the corner.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So it's like these uber rich people, they want to feel urban. They want to feel like they live in the city. So they kick people out of their homes.
Yeah, by the way, if you want to live in a loft, then move to New York or
Thank
Chicago.
You.
Don't. Why are you you're moving to downtown L.A.?
They're
putting in a Soho house.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying it's bullshit because if you want to live, because you don't want to live that life, you just want to live it right now because it's hip. If you really wanted to live in a vertical city, you would live in Chicago, New York, some of the other cities. It's like we're a horizontal city.
LA is on its way up, though. No, but if you go downtown, it is,
I understand that, but I'm saying that's all going to crash because 10 years from now, 20 years from now, people who are 21 or 25 and have money or move into a loft downtown will get married, want to have kids. You're not going to raise kids in a loft. They're going to move back out to Burbank, and all of these things are going to be empty.
Hannes,
and
you're bringing me down, man, again. Why?
Because I love real estate talk.
Clementine.
I told you we need to call this real estate worthy.
We're going to play a shotgun story worthy in 1 second, but first I have a quiz for you. Can you spell the word diarrhea?
No.
I know.
I'm sorry.
I read that about you, and I also can't.
Somewhere.
And I can't spell it either.
Never.
Go
Never.
Ahead. Just give it a shot.
This
go.
Is the biggest left turn you've ever taken.
D-I-A-R-R-H-E-A.
E-H-A. That's not correct.
That's not
Finney.
I don't know how to spell
give
diarrhea.
Give me it. Come on. Let's do it. Run it out.
D-I-A-E-H.
No, that's not right either. Ben?
But.
Nobody has any idea.
Why do we care?
I just found it interesting, and I was looking for things that Clementine and I might have in common, and one of the things we have in common is that we can't spell diarrhea.
Apparently, you have a common to the entire world, so. Well, now tell us the proper spelling.
I have no idea, man.
Well, why don't you? How do you know we were wrong, then?
Why would I know that?
I know I was wrong.
I know she was
wrong. Because I'm always wrong when it comes to diarrhea.
What? I swear to God. I'm editing this whole thing out. I'm coming to your house and editing this up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
hey, listen.
That ain't going to happen.
I know. You want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
I do.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Okay. Oh, the topic is fish. Do I start now? Oh, God. Okay. So when I was a kid, we had this lake house, which, of course, was a plantation. There's a horrible, devastating story about that somewhere, I'm sure. But anyway, it was on this lake, and someone told me that catfish live on the bottom, and they got so fat they can never come to the top, and that they've eaten divers, and it's terrible. And I've been terrified of them and lakes my entire life. I'm 36 years old, and I just found out that story's not true.
Fantastic. That is a perfect shotgun story where they look at this, Hannes. 28 seconds.
Panic. I would like to compliment your story.
Yeah,
I love the idea that you thought catfish were so fat they couldn't come off the bottom. And I'd like to compliment myself because we were putting categories up. And I, as a complete joke, wrote fish. And it has been the spur of a dozen fantastic story.
It's a runaway real story topic.
Fish, people love.
Isn't it big fish stories? What's the?
Yes, big fish story. Yeah, but it's like there's some. Everybody, it's like you would think, I don't go fishing. Well, you ate fish.
Yeah.
You just found out that catfish don't eat people.
Right.
These specific
kind of catfish. That
yes.
Don't.
Where was the lake house in Tennessee?
It was in, Alabama, which is weird because one of my friends that I met in Los Angeles, it turns out that his family lived there and my mom and his dad like dated in the summer when they were 16. His dad is
summer romance.
Yep.
Summer romance.
There's not much to do in Alabama on a plantation in the summer, if you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That was the worst imitation of a Southern person.
Yes, it was. I was going to let it go.
Why did you get that big smile when you said it was probably has this crazy story about the plantation?
Because I realized, like, I've talked about our nanny and her family and how we're Southern. And it's like the generational, like, nanny, lady. Yeah. And then now I'm talking about we had this house that was once a plantation.
But you know what? Our country's not very old. You know, we're only a couple hundred years old. So really, it's not, you know, your it doesn't go back that far.
No, but it goes far enough back with like trauma and horrible things that
I think what you're saying is we're thinking you have relatives who own slaves. That's what I think you're saying. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
No, yes.
Yes. Yeah, this is what
it wasn't that many generations
ago. How many?
I mean, my one side of the family were really poor, so we didn't. But well, actually my mom's side of the family, they were really poor too. They were chicken farmers. But it's just that sort of guilt of what our history is and what.
But you
my
only feel that
because
you grew up out here. People who grew up there, they don't feel that.
No, they do.
Do they?
Do you
enlightened,
think?
Educated. Ooh, I'm gonna get hate mail. Enlightened, educated.
That's
people.
Okay. No one in the South is listening to this.
Perfect. They will now.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it just depends on who you're talking to. I mean, you can't just blanket and say the whole state is ignorant or rednecks or anything like that.
No, because they're not. And
of
a lot
course
of my
not.
Family's there and they're very in touch and they're very, not that being liberal is, the answer, but they are very liberal and they are, like, we have a lot of shame in our past and we need to, like, be ashamed of it, not run around with like rebel yell.
But not pretend. No, that whole thing where guys are still like the Confederate flag.
That's
it's
my.
Like,
I have
it's
a
like,
cousin.
You, first of all, the Confederacy.
That's so hard.
The Confederacy was literally you were. That was treason.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they never call it what it is. Like, well, it was a rebellion. It was this. We were standing up for the South. It's like you were treasonous to the United States.
Yeah.
And if and it's such a thing that like if you told those people that somebody today committed treason, they would say, well, you should shoot them immediately.
Yeah.
But it's but if they commit treason, it's standing up for their rights.
Well, and the
it's
other
like,
thing,
what?
They say, oh, it was about economics, not slavery. It was about the economics of slavery.
Of slavery.
Yeah. Yeah, slavery.
Good
made,
Lord.
Yeah, slavery is the only thing. I've watched Ken Burns' Civil War 1,000 times because I freaking love that show. Without slavery, the cotton industry would never have made any money. And even though they invented the cotton gin, it's like slavery literally made it possible to make cheap, to pick and grow and make cheap cotton goods, which benefited all the people in the South, the white people. Mm-hmm. It benefited all the customers, and it was all about economics based on torturing
production.
Human beings.
Yeah, production.
And it
yeah.
And that was, but the, so you just go, yeah, well, it was just, you know. And it's all money. It's all money. It's like the, you know, England wasn't like, we refuse to import your goods made with slavery, even though we ourselves have already abolished slavery. Mm-hmm. They were like, well, hey, look, we got bed sheets.
Right. Well,
you
that's
know, they're
the
covered
thing.
In blood, but we got right. bed sheets.
But when people say like, oh, the South will rise again, which people do still today have those stickers on their cars. And you're like, when you say that, what you're saying is, I would like to enslave a group of people.
Yeah.
Wake up.
It always surprises me when people want to move backward in any way.
Yeah.
What is that?
God.
The way America was, why
don't
would we want to be that
started?
Way?
Right. Like, well, how make America great again well, when yeah, we have people separate but equal? Really?
Yeah.
Right, right. Well, it's like the whole, I have a friend who said to me once, it was like the gay marriage thing. He's like, gay marriage, in 50 years, people are going to be saying to their kids, like, look, grandpa doesn't think, grandpa's just old. And you're just, he's from another era, and he doesn't think gay people should be married, because it's going to be so not even an issue. Her daughter will have to, I will have to explain to her when she's 28, she's now 8, that when you were 8, it was a big deal that gay people could get married. She's going to be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
So that's the good news. I mean, that's the good news that we've got people coming up behind us who are brighter and more intelligent. Yeah. And our education led us so far, but
well, they can
now
be,
we get
but
to pass
you know
it
what?
On.
There's a lot of moronic 8-year-olds out there.
Well,
they're usually,
Raised by their moronic
can I just say
parents.
One more thing about the Confederacy? It's like, I almost think, although it would have been a terrible thing to do to the slaves, I almost think we should have just let them go. Because
oh,
it would have, no, because it would have failed. As a country, it would not have sustained itself.
No.
I mean, it was morally we had to fight to end slavery, even though we lied at the time. And Lincoln said, this is not a fight to end slavery, which was a complete lie for morally high purposes.
Right.
But it's like the idea they, you know, the people you're talking about, the South Arise, they're like, if we had won the war and become our own little country, we'd be great. That would have failed completely.
It's true.
And we wouldn't now have a voting block of people who have an image of a country that never existed that they don't have anymore.
Right.
We were once, you were never.
Yeah, they're all
you
delusional.
Were never a separate entity and morally superior and more Christian than us.
Oh, God.
That never happened. Hmm. Well, it's nothing worse to me than the people who go, you know, this is the real America.
Ugh.
No, no, no. You're part of America. Yeah. And all the people you hate, all the gay people in San Francisco and the Jews in New York, they're Americans too.
So here we are. It is an election year. You know, any thoughts? What do we do here? What are we doing?
Personally, I intend to vote for Bernie Sanders. And I want, I feel like Hillary is like the Susan Lucci of presidential elections. Like at this point, we should just give it to her. And I desperately would love to have a president with a vagina.
Yeah.
But I don't feel that Hillary is that person. Mm. I feel like she's just not quite far left enough for me.
Okay.
So
interesting. So but, listen, thank you so much for coming today.
Thanks
I mean,
for having
I really
me.
Appreciate it. Your story is just fascinating.
Thank you.
And it's just so exciting. And I can't thank you enough for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Really,
I feel bad that
I
got so heavy about so
no,
much
it's exciting.
Stuff.
Like,
no, we
I've
don't always
wanting,
have to be funny. We demonstrate that.
I know. I do. No,
I've been wanting to talk slavery for
like
years.
Like me.
Exactly.
All right, you guys. We're going to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick, Andrew Steven, Maria Spertolozzi, and of course, Ben for recording us today. Ben, what's your last name? Ben Stewart. God damn it. I knew that.
Ben Stewart. Ben Stewart, by the way, looks He's got a resemblance to Aaron Rodgers, so I got a little fancy to him.
Oh, God, honey.
I don't know who that is.
It's a football player. It's not important.
He's the football player. He's the quarterback of God's team, the Green Bay Packers.
And on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, you know, he wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
He does not look like Aaron Rodgers.
And on behalf of our storyteller tonight, again, Clementine Ford, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. And on behalf of you, Hannah Spinney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com. I'll keep you safe.